I campaigned on the idea that we need a new approach to governing Pennsylvania, one that challenges the status quo and takes on old problems in fundamentally new ways. And one of the old problems we need to put to rest is the idea that Democrats and Republicans cannot work together to solve Pennsylvania's problems. I believe we can. And that's why I've... Thank you very much.
That was Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf delivering his budget address last year. What a difference a year makes. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Pennsylvania politics now seems more deadlocked than ever, with Democrats and Republicans failing to reach a full budget agreement now nearly 8 months after it was due. Governor Tom Wolf had some tough talk for the Pennsylvania legislature in his second budget address. WHYY's Mary Wilson reports that this time around, Wolf was much less lofty with his rhetoric.
Wolf's first move in his roughly 25-minute speech was to dispense with the idea that it was a typical budget address, given the fact that the state's spending is still in disarray.
Usually, this speech is an opportunity to lay out an ambitious agenda for the year ahead. But I can't give that speech. Not under these circumstances.
Wolf's proposal calls for $2.7 billion in new and higher taxes to close a budget gap and funnel more money into education, human services, and mandated spending. But the speech didn't focus on that. Instead, Wolf described the dire financial position he says the state will be in if his proposals are not approved.
My fellow Pennsylvanians, our Commonwealth is in crisis, a crisis that threatens our future.
Wolf attempted to reframe the state's budget woes, not as a result of political discord, but basic math. The state faces a nearly $2 billion deficit, according to the state's independent fiscal office.
It's a time bomb, and it's ticking away right now, even as I speak. If it explodes, the people in this chamber, if you allow it to explode, then Pennsylvania will experience a fiscal catastrophe the likes of which we have never seen.
Wolf's budget proposal calls for $33.3 billion in spending. That would increase funding for K-12 schools and higher education. It would also put more money towards county human services and programs for people with intellectual disabilities. But the administration says most of the new spending is in mandated costs: pensions, health care, human services, and state prisons. To pay for it, Wolf is proposing a slew of taxes he didn't get last year. Those include a levy on natural gas drillers and a hike in the personal income tax. He would expand the sales tax to make it apply to movie tickets, basic cable, and digital downloads. He's calling for higher taxes on cigarettes and other tobacco products. And the plan would hike taxes on banks and put a surcharge on insurance premiums. The governor encouraged lawmakers to help him find alternative ways to close the budget deficit.
If you ignore that time bomb ticking, if you won't take seriously your responsibility to the people of Pennsylvania, and find another job.
Not everyone was cheering, but Republican Senator Mario Scavello of Monroe County took the jibe in stride.
I have to update my resume. The governor said we got to look for other jobs, so.
Mary Wilson in Harrisburg.
Governor Wolf is pushing for the same education spending priorities he laid out last year. But after 1 year of negotiations with the Republican-held State House and Senate, none of Wolf's goals have been accomplished. In total, between this year's unresolved budget and next year's, Wolf proposes a $677 million boost to basic and special education spending. But that huge increase gets at the heart of the issue. Governor Wolf is starting to negotiate a new budget while still hashing out many aspects of the old plan. WHYY's Marie Cusick explains.
Wolf now finds himself in the awkward position of trying to negotiate two deals with the Republican-led legislature. Among the unfinished business, how to fill a nearly $2 billion budget hole.
I did not run for this office to be party to the corner-cutting and budget gimmickry that got us into this mess. We can't afford to play political games while this crisis is casting such a dark shadow on our future. There is simply too much at stake. The train has been careening down the tracks for years, and now the moment of impact has arrived.
Wolf says Pennsylvania desperately needs new, recurring sources of revenue to avoid a catastrophe.
Anyone in this chamber who claims we can simply cut our way out of this mess without also increasing revenue is just ignoring the math. They're also ignoring history. If we don't have sustainable revenue sources in our budget, the result will be billions of dollars in new property tax hikes at the local level. Pennsylvanians need to prepare for these consequences.
So how did it go over? Not well. Republican leaders say they did not appreciate the tone and accused Wolf of being out of touch with political realities. GOP House Speaker Mike Terzai says lawmakers have to answer to their constituents who want them to hold the line on taxes.
I think it's easy to live off of Mount Wolf or off of Rittenhouse Square and not know what real people are doing in everyday lives. I think it's easy to lecture and scold and to act like you know better and be elitist, but come and see what real people are doing in everyday lives.
And House Majority Leader Dave Reed doesn't buy Wolf's apocalyptic picture of the state.
I think the governor's doing everything he can to help justify the biggest tax increase possible so they've got the most money to spend over the next couple of years. And telling people that gloom and doom is coming is certainly a way to do that. But look, we've been struggling to pass a budget over the last number of months. We're 8 months into the fiscal year. 87% of that budget is done. But lo and behold, the sky has not fallen.
And lest anyone think Wolf has more friends in the Senate, Republican Majority Leader Jake Corman made it clear the governor's speech drove another wedge in the relationship.
So I don't know where he thinks we go from here. I don't know how he thinks that that gets him votes in either caucus. My guess is today we are further away than we were of June of last year. And my guess, that's what the governor wants.
Amidst the ongoing budget disputes, Wolf quietly placed limits on state agencies' abilities to fill hundreds of vacant positions. The administration says the caps are in place until further notice, but won't say how long that will be or how many vacancies are affected. Meanwhile, schools, social service agencies, and local governments are still paying for Harrisburg's dysfunction. The partial budget Wolf signed late last year does not include reimbursements for the millions of dollars they racked up in interest fees while borrowing money to avoid shutdowns during the historic standoff.
WHYY's Marie Cusick reporting. Last month, Winter Storm Jonas caused flooding along the Jersey Shore. A lot of those towns sustained damage to their dunes and bulkheads, the very things that are supposed to protect them from flooding. As WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, flooding this week again put those protective measures to the test.
West Wildwood was left with a hole in its wooden bulkhead after Jonas flooded the town in late January. Borough Administrator Chris Ridings says this week, crews have been using concrete blocks to stop floodwaters from another storm.
They're not waterproof, but they will stop at least the wave action from coming into town. So you're still going to get water seepage, but if nothing else, at least it stops the wave action until the repairs can be made.
West Wildwood had about 2 feet of flooding this week. New Jersey's Department of Environmental Protection has been helping towns protect themselves while longer-term repair projects get moving. For example, West Wildwood was allowed to skip a long state permitting process to patch its bulkhead in the meantime. But the back-to-back storms have been a concern for towns with serious damage to their fortifications and with few resources to make a quick fix. In Stone Harbor, huge chunks of the beachfront sand dune washed away during Jonas.
Our beaches got totally decimated. It protected the homes. There wasn't one bit of damage along the oceanfront other than the sand.
Mayor Suzanne Walters says the dunes are beat up, but they're still working.
They're holding up. They're not at their best, definitely, but they're holding up.
Walters says most of the flooding in Stone Harbor this week is actually coming from the bayside, where the town already has a 7-foot bulkhead, leaving her with the even tougher problem of figuring out why a protective measure that's intact still isn't doing its job. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, New Jersey Senate President Steve Sweeney wants to get a constitutional amendment on the 2017 ballot, raising the minimum wage by $1 per year until it reaches $15, and then tie future increases to the rate of inflation. Sweeney expects that Governor Chris Christie would veto a proposal by the Assembly Speaker calling for an immediate $15 an hour minimum.
by providing a phase-in, you recognize the business community's difficulty in absorbing that large an increase all at once, and you give businesses predictability.
South Jersey Congressman Donald Norcross is proposing a similar plan at the federal level. He says it would give more hard-working people a living wage and cut down on the benefits they're collecting from government. The Pennsylvania Senate's Democratic floor leader says Republicans are moving too fast in planning a vote tomorrow on whether to remove Attorney General Kathleen Kane from office. Minority Leader Jay Costa said today that he'd rather wait at least until March to debate Kane's ability to perform her job with a suspended law license. The state Supreme Court suspended her license in October. The Senate is expected to vote tomorrow on whether to employ an obscure provision of the state constitution to kick her out of office. Republicans will need at least a few Democratic votes to reach the supermajority of 33 required for removal. Costa says he's not sure how many members of his caucus support Kane's removal. A Pennsylvania Supreme Court justice goes on trial before the state's Judicial Ethics Court in Philadelphia late next month. The Court of Judicial Discipline today scheduled the case of Justice Michael Aiken for March 29th in a City Hall courtroom. He's accused of violating rules for judicial conduct by exchanging obscene and objectionable emails with friends. Aiken used a state computer to exchange the emails through a private email account. If convicted, he faces a range of possible punishment that could include removal from the bench. The Republican is a former Cumberland County District Attorney, and he's been on the high court since 2002. Aiken has apologized for what he's described as insensitive emails, but he argues that his actions do not deserve punishment. 35 degrees, a rain-snow mix falling. The evening forecast, periods of snow, a possible total accumulation of 2 to 4 inches. Tonight's low, 30 degrees. Still ahead, an upcoming conference looks at the pressures faced by students at elite colleges.
There's this idea of like putting on a face that everything's perfectly fine.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Diversity is top of mind among a lot of college students nowadays. Faculty, recently, too.
Talented minority faculty are not unicorns. They're there. It just depends on where you're looking. You have to look.
I'm Kai Rizal. College, diversify yourself. That is next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace follows NewsWorks Tonight at 6:30 this evening on WHYY.
Widener University supports WHYY. Widener offers 14 full-time and part-time graduate programs for working professionals and career-oriented students, including business administration and public administration, at 3 locations. Widener is hosting a graduate open house on Wednesday, March 16th from 5 to 7 p.m. It's an opportunity to learn more about Widener's graduate programs, financial aid opportunities, and meet with professors. More information about the open house on March 16th at widener.edu/grad open house. Widener Leadership Works.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Students from the 8 Ivy League schools will gather at UPenn's campus this weekend for a conference on mental health. As WHYY's Todd Bookman reports, the first of its kind event will tackle how to handle intense academic stress.
The aim of the conference is to bring mental health farther out of the shadows, to encourage students to speak more openly about the pressures they face to perform. In short, to stop hiding behind what's become known locally as Penn Face.
At Penn, there's this idea of like putting on a face that everything's perfectly fine, that you are, you know, the chair of 5 different groups and you're excelling in all your classes, which is really unrealistic.
Mabel Oviedo, a senior English major, is lead organizer for the 3-day event. Students will attend workshops on topics including substance abuse and gender and cultural identity issues, as well as how to handle the expectations that come with Ivy League life.
When you put a group of really ambitious students who've done amazing things, have always been told they're number one, and you place them in an environment with each other, there's going to be that feeling of like, am I good enough?
Penn, while not alone, has faced a wave of suicides in the past 3 years, prompting the school to create a task force and expand its mental health services. Oviedo says students will share ideas for what's working on their campuses and what can be improved.
Because what might have worked at Penn might also work at Princeton, but we just aren't sharing that information right now.
She says changing the culture on campuses will take time. The organizers plan to host more events in coming years. For WHYY News, I'm Todd Bookman.
A Voorhees, New Jersey boy has become a global sensation for his appearance in an Iron Man comic book. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that the five-year-old uses the superhero as inspiration as he lives with hemophilia.
Iron Man is a superhero whose power comes from a high-tech suit of armor. What powers the armor is an arc reactor that's a fictional nuclear energy source embedded inside the chest of the wearer, Tony Stark. In the movie, Stark is played by Robert Downey Jr., and here he asks Pepper Potts, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, to remove the arc reactor from his chest.
Is it safe?
Yeah, it should be fine. It's like Operation. You just don't let it touch the socket wall or it goes beep.
What do you mean Operation?
It's just a game. Never mind.
It's not unlike the port inside Max Levy. He's a five-year-old with hemophilia, and he needs that port to take medicine because his veins cannot receive an intravenous injection.
How do you explain to a four-year-old kid that he's going to need a port in his chest?
That's Max's dad, Dan Levy.
We had just seen the movie, and I said, hey, remember that scene that you thought was pretty gross where Tony Stark takes the arc reactor out of his chest and replaces it? He's like, oh, yeah. I said, you're going to get one of those. And he was so excited. He just was like, I get to be Iron Man.
The operation happened about a year and a half ago, and Max is doing fine. He plays with his older sister, Zoe, with Iron Man and Captain America action figures.
He is American, and he has this awesome shield as a star. And the reason I like Tony Stark is because...
Word of Max's enthusiasm for Iron Man got back to Marvel Comics, who creates Iron Man, and they decided to write Max into the story. In issue number 4, Tony Stark visits a children's hospital, and Max gives Stark some lip. Since then, the story of Max has caught fire. He's appeared on news outlets not just across the country, but in Canada, Ecuador, Australia. His father, Dan, lost track of how many interviews they've done.
If you're going to have your 15 minutes, I'm so happy it's about my kid who can spread information about hemophilia and, you know, what you can do to not only help with funding and research and this, but just if you have it. Don't be defined by what you can't do. Be defined by who you are, and for him, he's a superhero now.
Dan says his son will likely have the port in his chest for at least 2 more years. By then, he hopes his veins will be strong and large enough to take medicine by needle. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
A play about the late 19th century playwright, novelist, and dandy Oscar Wilde has opened in its world premiere at Lantern Theater in Center City, Philadelphia. From the Depths is the first original play by Lantern's longtime artistic director and co-founder, Charles McMahon. WHYY theater blogger Howard Shapiro offers this review.
Oscar Wilde is an endlessly fascinating figure to many people, and he keeps popping up in different parts of our culture. Just weeks ago, the PBS NewsHour carried a report that when Wilde died at age 46 in 1900, it wasn't from the syphilis many people assumed, and may have been from a super-strength ear infection. He's listed in most biographies as being killed by meningitis after he languished for 2 years in jail for gross indecency. That meant homosexuality, a crime not often prosecuted. How come he was? That's the question he asks himself far too many times in Charles McMahon's new play, Oscar Wilde, From the Depths. In it, we see a pathetic Wilde, thrown into prison when he was at the top of his form and the height of his popularity, after his witty society-bashing comedy, The Importance of Being Earnest. McMahon drew much of his inspiration and some of his dialogue from a weighty tome Wilde wrote in prison called De Profundis, which is Latin for From the Depths, the play's title. Wilde's De Profundis is a far-reaching exploration of everything from the way confinement shaped his thoughts to why he believed Jesus was an artist. It's a must-read for anyone who wants to understand how this master intellect integrated all his experiences into a worldview, but it doesn't even begin to work as dialogue on a stage. The best scenes bring Wilde, played wonderfully by the graceful actor Mark Levasseur, face-to-face with a number of characters in his life, all played by two compelling actors, Jared McGlennigan and David Bardeen. McMahon writes these scenes with strong real-life dialogue, and we learn more about Wilde from them than we do listening to his ponderous prison regrets. From the Depths is an ambitious evening despite its faults, and its best aspect is the way McMahon treats Wilde as something other than a foppishly witty, sexually wanton buffoon. Clearly, that was part of his persona. But From the Depths is about the other part, the part that was just a guy without the trappings of his celebrity. Lantern Theatre Company is running the play in St. Stephen's Theatre in Center City through February 14th. For WHYY, I'm Howard Shapiro.
Howard Shapiro is theater blogger for Newsworks.org. And finally, today's Fat Tuesday, the last day before Lent, and in Philadelphia, that means Fasnacht Day. Bakeries serving the seasoned delicacies, donuts fried in fat, get a mad rush of customers clamoring to pick up their orders. The tradition of eating fried donuts on Fat Tuesday comes from the Pennsylvania Dutch. They'd use the last of the fat in their households to fry dough to make the last tasty treats before weeks of palate deprivation. Customers at Hagley's Bakery in the Mayfair section of Northeast Philly started lining up before dawn. Many have come to the bakery to buy Fasnacht for decades. That's nearly as long as Pennsylvania's budget stalemate. Zing! That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane will fight for her political life when the Pennsylvania Senate convenes tomorrow. They'll decide whether she should be removed from office. We'll bring you full coverage of the proceeding. This special program note, stay with WHYY-FM for live coverage of the New Hampshire primary from NPR News beginning at 8 this evening. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. PAFA is now accepting applications for its Summer Academy for high school students, a five-week art-making experience with college-level classes in drawing, painting, sculpture, and printmaking. Trips to galleries and museums of Philadelphia, New York, and Washington, D.C., and an exhibition in the PAFA Museum. Details at pafa.org/summer academy. That's pafa.org/summer academy.
Okay, time to show your love to the station that brings you your favorite programs.
Over 50% of our budget comes from listeners like you. And every donation helps us bring you more stories, more interviews, more of what you love.
Right now, we're fewer than 2,200 gifts away from reaching our goal of 6,400 gifts to the station. And you can help.
Make a donation by visiting whyy.org/support.
And thank you for showing your love.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. A virtuoso with chops that defy comparison, says the New York Times of Yefim Bronfman. Bronfman joins the Philadelphia Orchestra and conductor Vladimir Yurovsky for Beethoven's Emperor Concerto on Valentine's weekend. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or online this Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Valentine's weekend at the Kimmel Center, Beethoven's Emperor Concerto with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
This evening's forecast, periods of snow, total possible accumulation up to 4 inches. Tomorrow, cloudy to start. Turning partly sunny by the afternoon, a breezy day, Wednesday's high 37. This is WHYY.